the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
You're very welcome back to The Last Word. Frank Graney here filling in for Matt Cooper this evening. And there really is only one place to start in our weekly US slot. Yesterday's White House summit. In a significant show of solidarity, several European leaders filed in behind Ukraine President Volodymyr Zelensky for talks with Donald Trump aimed at ending the war in Ukraine. It came just days after Russia's President Vladimir Putin sat down with the US President in Alaska. On Fox this morning, Trump was asked if anything had surprised him about Putin and Zelensky.
Well, I think the fact that maybe they're getting along a little bit better than I thought. Otherwise, I wouldn't have set up the two meeting. I would have set up a three, a trilat. I think they're doing a little bit better. There's been tremendous bad blood. And again, this was all worked out by an administration that didn't have a clue. And if you remember, they said, well, if you made a minor incursion, that would be okay. That was the end, the whole thing, when Biden made that statement. But minor incursion, what does that mean? So I think they're doing okay. I wouldn't say they are ever going to be best friends, but they're doing okay. And we're just going to see. So we're setting up a meeting. I sort of set it up with Putin and Zelensky. And, you know, they're the ones that have to call the shots. We're 7,000 miles away, in all fairness. You know, we spent through the previous administration $350 billion. Europe has spent a lot also, $100 billion, but it should be reversed if we should have been in for anything. But it wouldn't have happened, so that would have been much better because so many people died. This is the biggest bad situation since World War II. There's been nothing even close.
And as always, Cal Thomas and Mary McKeown are with us. And we're also joined by Edward Burke, lecturer in war studies at UCD. And I might start with you, Marion. And in relation to that clip, Trump seems to suggest that Putin and Zelensky are doing okay. What do you think he's basing those comments on?
You know, just listening to those comments, it just exposes the depths of, I don't know if it's just mendacity or ignorance or a combination of both. By what gauge is he saying they're getting on better? I assume neither of them has spoken to each other since well before the Russian invasion 3.5 years ago. They're getting along. It's absurd. It's also completely incorrect to say that America has spent $300 billion. It has not. In the combination of military, economic and other aid from Europe, they've actually donated, if you include also the UK, they have given more than America has. America has given about $130 billion. I'm not saying it's nothing, but it's a hell of a cheap price to pay for keeping Putin contained, you know, in Russia and unfortunately now in parts, significant parts of Ukraine. As I say, you know, everything changes every day. Like, first of all, there were going to be harsh sanctions immediately if there was no ceasefire. Then that's all just pushed off the table without another word. Then there's going to be a trilateral meeting. Suddenly that's down to a bilateral meeting. I suspect that Trump is beginning to realise the depths of his own ignorance and that he knows he probably couldn't host a trilateral meeting with two leaders who, well, you know, either of whom is significantly smarter than he is. So I think that all we're doing is playing for time, and by playing for time, it's playing to Russia's benefit. You know, Putin's going to come back in a couple of weeks, say maybe I'll have a meeting with Putin or with Zelensky, maybe I won't. Drag it out, keep pushing the ground offensive forward in the meantime. I see this as a hiding to nowhere. If Trump was serious about peace, he would have implemented stringent, harsh sanctions immediately, you know, straight away after Alaska, and said, okay, we didn't reach a ceasefire, now the sanctions are coming and we're putting secondary sanctions on every country that buys oil from Russia. That's the way to get peace, not this performative nonsense of toing and froing about talks or talks about talks.
Cal, let's talk about the summit itself then. And I want to ask you, what did you think of Zelensky's approach to it, especially in light of, I suppose, what could only be described as a disastrous visit last time to the White House? Zelensky seemed to get the dress code right this time. And I noticed Trump wasn't left wanting when it came to thank yous from the Ukraine president. That was obviously an issue last time around.
Yeah, I was going to mention the suit thing. Got dressed up for this one. Look, I think Zelensky knows Trump now, and that all of them, actually, all the world leaders, which was really remarkable tableau, I thought. I haven't seen that many world leaders from Europe, especially since John Kennedy's funeral in 1963. So that was a good projection, I think, of unity. But the bottom line is, and I agree with Marion, she must have read my column today about sanctions and everything. If Putin were applying for a bank loan, his credit is so bad on keeping promises and abiding by treaties that he would be turned down immediately. This guy is a liar. He's an international pariah. He's wanted for war crimes. He kills women and children and other civilians. He bombs civilian targets. He is an evil man. You cannot negotiate with evil. People always go back to Munich and Hitler and Chamberlain, but that's a tremendous model. If you give an evil leader even some of what he wants, like, you know, he was saying Biden did, it was just a small incursion, you're just going to encourage him to do more. And Putin hadn't said or done anything that would allow anyone to believe that he is not going to pursue gobbling up Ukraine and trying to take back the former Soviet satellite states. He says so. Why should we believe him? And I think sanctions are the only answer. Secondary sanctions for countries that are buying oil from Russia, that will get his attention, because his economy is teetering.
Yeah, and I mean, rolling out the red carpet for him in Alaska in the way that he did last week is just an incredible example of pandering to, as you say, you know, an indicted war criminal. And that you know, you were quite scathing about Donald Trump in your column, just in relation to how he handled that whole thing as well.
Well, it's foreign policy by personality, and that doesn't work. I remember something Margaret Thatcher said years ago, that we in the West make a mistake when we transpose our morality on those who don't share it. There is evil in the world. It has to be withstood. It has to be defeated. And, you know, the Russian foreign ministry has already announced that it's not going to, Russia's not going to settle for any kind of security forces in Ukraine. Trump thinks he can split hairs by saying, well, we won't allow Ukraine to join NATO, but we will have European forces there. It's the same thing. It's a distinction without a difference.
Mm-hmm. I want to play another clip before I bring in Edward Burke. And this is, and it seems that there was a charm offensive. It was a significant show of strength and solidarity that Vladimir Zelensky was joined by so many key European leaders. And it seems that part of the strategy on their part was to butter Trump up at every opportunity. And this clip is from the Washington Post, and it highlights the many occasions when the leaders felt obliged to say thank you to Donald Trump.
I really want to thank you, President of the United States, dear Donald.
Thank you, Mr. President, for organizing this this meeting and for your commitment.
Something is changing, something has changed, thanks to you.
Nobody's been able to bring it to this point, so I thank you for that.
Mr. President, please. Dear Donald, many thanks for having us today.
I really want to thank you for your leadership.
And thank you very much for your efforts.
Thank you so much. I think that we had very good conversation with President Trump.
We have such big unity today. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you very much,
Mr. President.
And the fact that you have said, I'm willing to participate in the security guarantees is a big step. It's really a breakthrough, and it makes all the difference. So also thank you for that.
A trilateral meeting seems the sensible next step. So thank you for being prepared to take that forward.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the map, by the way.
Good map.
It was great.
That's incredible. I think the Ukrainian president Zelensky thanked Trump about 11 times in the 4.5 minutes that he addressed him publicly at those meetings yesterday. But Edward Burke, I want to bring you and just ask you your thoughts on what you made of his entourage and that approach that they took, seemingly adopting a kind of a kiss the ass kind of approach. Was that the best way to woo Donald Trump and to get his attention? Because there's no doubt the EU needs the US.
Yeah, they do. They need the U.S. Because although Marion's completely right, they have over 3.5 years they've outspent the U.S. in assistance to Ukraine since the war has begun by, you know, $165 billion to U.S.'s $130 billion. So, you know, Trump's figures are entirely wrong. Marion's right to point that out. But they do need they certainly do need the United States for more military high-tech equipment and intelligence, so whether it comes to, and indeed sort of, you know, air defense systems, long-range missiles, etc. So the U.S. is, that Europe cannot fill that gap in terms of capabilities for, you know, quite a few years yet. So I understand the tactic, you know, it's flattery, it's sycophancy. I think for Europe, it's a bit of a gamble on the international stage. You know, certainly I understand that China is looking at Europe and thinking, you know, Chinese diplomats have been wondering in terms of the tactics here, in terms of asking whether Europe is considered to be bullied, because obviously Europe hasn't responded on trade. Europe was humiliated by J.D. Vance at the Munich Security Conference earlier this year. And so there's a sense that there's a danger here that, look, if Trump goes ahead and begins to ask impossible things of Zelensky, asking him to transfer more than 250,000 Ukrainians in unoccupied parts of the Donbass region to the control of the Putin regime, and we know what that means in terms of, you know, the mass kidnapping of children, rape, torture, you know, summary executions, etc. So if Trump tries to force Zelensky into giving up territory, and Europe is simply ignored, Europe is very much against that, and you know, then this becomes a humiliating experience for European leaders in the world stage, that they have, in some way, you know, kind of debased themselves in Washington, but got very little out of it. So it's high risk for Europe. I understand why they're doing it, from in terms of the supply of key equipment to Ukrainian military to fight this war. But perhaps in terms of this seeming slavishness playing to Trump's ego, that's a tactic. I think people like Mark Rutte, the Secretary General of NATO, thinks that works. We'll see. We'll see. Perhaps it doesn't. Perhaps this gives Trump the impression that he can bully Europe and then ultimately ignore it.
Marian, I want to ask you about, I mean, we're all very aware of two red line issues for Zelensky. No concession of land and obviously security guarantees if we find ourselves in a time of peace. Did we get any clarity on the latter, the security guarantee sought by Zelensky?
No, I don't think so. And that's something I would be really concerned about, given what happened Minsk II, and as I've mentioned several times, the Budapest Memorandum of 1994, where, you know, the words assurances and guarantee were interchanged, and one is legally binding in America, as in guarantees is signified as a legally binding international law applicable word, whereas, you know, assurances are not. And they were interchanging those two words. If I were Zelensky, I would not agree to anything that isn't enforceable by international law, that isn't cast iron, because I found both sides of the language was really woolly. Now, we're a long, long way away from an agreement, but I wouldn't have taken a whole lot of comfort from that. I think, look, this was about, again, it was another performance, another made TV performance, where Trump loves this. It looks like he's doing something. It looks like he's taking action. He's got all the European leaders trotting up to the White House, as Edward said and Carl said, you know, flattering him and doffing his cap and making him acknowledging his status as the big global colossus, you know. And but what's Trump going to deliver? Because it seems like, for starters, Zelensky cannot give away land without a referendum. Mm-hmm. So in a way, he's in a good position there. He cannot legally, as the president of Ukraine, say, yeah, you know what, have at it, take all this land, and by the way, sure, I'll give you the land you haven't even conquered, and sure, I'll concede the military bases and the garrisons in that, which would just allow you to go to springboard straight to Kiev. You know, I mean, of course he can't do that, but Trump can then say, oh, well, you're the obstacle to peace, which is what he flip-flops on doing, because he keeps changing his mind every 24 hours. So I think there's very little indication there's going to be any peace anytime soon. As I said earlier, that plays to Russia's advantage. I think Trump is just talking the talk. He's the centre of attention. He may make some money. He may sell Ukraine $100 billion worth of weapons. He may sell NATO another $100 billion worth of weapons to give to Ukraine. He may make a bit of money out of this. But is he serious about peace? And is he serious about peace and restoring the democratic front lines that existed before Putin invaded in 2022? No, I don't think he is at all.
Cal, what do you think? Do you think that Donald Trump is serious about playing peacemaker and bringing peace to Ukraine?
Well, I think he is. He correctly cited these smaller wars that he has helped settle, including the one with Azerbaijan, which is going to get the Chinese attention, because they have been trying to get influence in that area. And I think it's who could be against settling wars? But this is the biggest one of all. And of course, it has a history, Russia's involvement in that part of the world, in Ukraine, over many, many years. We're going to have to wait and see. I think it's going to take a couple of weeks to see how this sorts out. I agree with Marian. I don't see how Trump can say that Zelensky and Putin are starting to get along. Mm-hmm. I'm not even aware of any phone conversations. So I think a lot of this is made up and wishful thinking. And again, we're dealing with a man who is evil and who doesn't keep promises. And I think that something has got to happen, or the war is going to continue along with the killing.
Edward, I mean, just going back to those security guarantees, I mean, can Trump be trusted on them? Because he always seems to be talking out of both sides of his mouth, and it depends who he's talking to. Because yesterday he didn't rule out the possibility of US troops on Ukrainian soil, but he did assure the American people today on Fox that that isn't a runner. So, I mean, how helpful is that kind of mixed messaging?
I mean, I think the idea, and I think, you know, Sergey Lavrov has been very clear on this as well, the foreign minister of Russia in the last few days, the idea that sort of, you know, you could have large-scale numbers of European troops, albeit not with sort of a NATO flash in their arm, turning up in Ukraine to you know, that is not something that Moscow will accept. I mean, that would, the idea that, that Ukraine would become a sort of a place with significant European NATO member states presence in terms of a force that is there to face down Russia in Ukraine in a state that, you know, ultimately Putin doesn't believe should be an independent country and outside of the control of Moscow. That's just not, it's not a runner. Mm-hmm. They might accept a sort of more lightly armed international truce observation force made up of non-NATO member states. But this will be a force that will have very little deterrent effect. And if Trump or, you know, anyone else thinks that, that Moscow is going to concede this, that there will be a sort of major air, U.S. air, he was talking about air policing, he's talking about the U.S. Air Force potentially being involved in some type of deterrent intervention force in Ukraine. If he thinks that Moscow is going to concede that, I mean, that would be a major blow, a major diplomatic defeat for Putin, and he's just not going to go along with it. Mm-hmm. He might go along with a smaller force that can be, you know, quickly assembled and also quickly dismantled if he decides that the time is right for him to renew hostilities. Mm-hmm. But there is potential for a temporary freeze here that's not beyond the realms of possibility. However, I suspect that this is a gambit by Putin, who simply wants to push it into a position where a trilateral summit will become two against one. It'll be him and Trump demanding that Zelensky gives up territory when he can't. And then he'll be trying to persuade the U.S. administration that it's all Zelensky's fault, and therefore he should be allowed to get on with the business of taking more Ukrainian territory.
Talking about the next steps then, I suppose, Marion, the next logical step is a meeting between Putin and Zelensky. Moscow has repeatedly said no to the possibility of a Putin-Zelensky sit-down, but Trump does seem confident, as we've heard, of making that happen. How realistic do you think that is?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, I don't think, as we say, Trump changes what he says every 24 hours and often more frequently than that.
That's generous,
For Putin to agree to meet Zelensky, that's tantamount in Putin's mind, at least, to him acknowledging that Zelensky is the legitimate leader of Ukraine, which is something he's been saying he isn't all along. So then by him agreeing to meet Zelensky, he would have to row back on what he has said all along and all his root causes of the conflict and all that other nonsense that Ukraine in its current iteration is not a legitimate state. So I don't know. He may be saying to Trump, yes, maybe in a couple of weeks. I think Putin's whole game here is so transparent that it's amazing that Trump can't see it. It's to just keep kicking the can down the road, and as he keeps kicking the can down the road to talks, to any kind of ceasefire, to any kind of meaningful peace discussions, that he keeps in his mind, he's going to keep getting more and more and more territory. So he will keep moving the territorial goalposts.
Well, Marion, that's a very interesting point, because even as these talks were taking place yesterday, rockets were still raining down on conflict areas in Ukraine.
Exactly. So he has stepped up the pace at which he is gaining new ground in Ukraine. So he probably figures, I'll just keep string them along for another 6 months. By then, I'll have taken over the whole of Donbass anyway. You know, and I really do think that's Putin's game. I don't think there's any world in which he's meaningfully going to give any concessions, that there's going to be any peace agreement where he will give back any part of what he has already taken, because what he wants isn't just what he's got. He wants the whole of Donbass region, not just the parts of the two provinces that he has at the moment. And he wants the whole land bridge straight to Crimea. But he also, I think, wants the prayer than got already. So I don't believe this is going to lead to peace. I know that sounds very negative and pessimistic, but we've seen Putin's game. He's been around for 25 years, as Carl said. Mm-hmm. He's a liar. He cannot be trusted. He's broken every agreement he's ever entered. So even if he were to enter a peace agreement, there's nothing to stop him rearming, restocking, re-recruiting, and then attacking Ukraine again in 2 years or 5 years.
Okay, well, look, Marion, it sounds like there are some gremlins or perhaps the Kremlin interfering with your line there, but we have run out of time, so we leave it there. Marion McKeown, Cal Thomas and Edward Burke, thank you very much for your contributions.
The Last Word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.